This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
Well, how great to have as our guest today for the first time on an LRC podcast, Dr. Gary North. Take a look at Gary's website, GaryNorth.com. Look at his immense and wonderful archive on LouRockwell.com. He's the author of 45 books and thousands of articles, so prolific. And his articles, of course, on LRC are typically some of our best read, time in and time out. The readers of LRC really appreciate him. And Gary, today I want to talk to you about, you're here at the Mises Institute today. You're going to be talking about calling and occupation and how, for most people, those are separate. And a few of us who are lucky enough get to combine those.
Yeah, that's right, Lou. And the calling I define as the most important thing you can do with your life in which you are most difficult to replace. Your occupation is clear. It's how you put food on the table. And most people aren't clear about this early enough. The earlier you get clear about it, the more you can produce in life. Occasionally, we find individuals who have their calling the same as their occupation. Ministers of the gospel, priests, occasionally teachers. They're really doing the most important thing they can do, and they get paid for it. But in most cases, we're not in that luxurious situation. And I'm going to be talking to the students here at Mises University today about the man I think is the finest example of my lifetime, at least, of someone who was able to do extremely well in terms of his occupation and his calling, but they were essentially secondary effects, one versus the other. There was no one that was clearly primary. Each of them seemed to be of equal value to him. One of them made a lot of money, one of them didn't. That's Bert Blumert. Now, Bert was a tremendously effective seller of coins. Good prices, didn't overhype it, sold for almost 50 years. Tremendous leader in terms of moral standing and efficiency within the whole coin industry. And he could have done just that and left a legacy within the coin industry. But he had a calling. And the calling was he wanted to promote what he saw as the ethics of liberty and the wonders of the free society. Now, his calling was not inconsistent with his occupation, but either could have done without the other. He didn't have to do both. Bert was very influential in founding the Center for Libertarian Studies. He sat on the board of the Mises Institute. He promoted his whole life libertarian ideals. He gave away books. He would always talk to you about libertarian issues if you wanted to talk about them. He wasn't pushy about it, but he was always ready to talk. He devoted a great deal of his life to the ideas that never made him a dime directly. And so he had to segregate, in one sense, his time. He had to devote time to both of the activities to be equally good. In one, he was pretty well known. Camino Coin Company and his presence was well known. But in terms of the libertarian movement, I don't think most people realize how important he was.
Well, he was extremely important. I must say he was the wisest man I ever knew. You could talk to him about any problem that you might have, whether it's financial or ideological or movement-related, fundraising questions, and he had an answer, and a considered answer, and so far as I can tell you, he was virtually always right. And it made me realize how sometimes in earlier societies, people were actually able to earn a living doing that as a wise man. Maybe it's a great rabbi or whatever, but the people would go to him, and he would have an answer for you. So that was Bert. I mean, he was extraordinary in that way. As to his business acumen, my favorite story is I'm not going to mention this man's name to protect him, but someone once said to me, you know, Lou, it's not fair all the attention you give to Bert Blumert on LouRockwell.com. And I said, gee, what is that? I mean, I publish his articles, but that's about it. He said, well, you know, he's got the gold page. And I said, well, that was his idea to have the gold price up there. But he said, well, you know, it's just not fair that he said, how does he charge such low premiums? He said, how can he make a living doing that? It's not fair. And I said, well, you know, his customers, we or his customers think is plenty fair. So
Bert was a fine businessman, terrific businessman. I dealt with him for many, many years. and worked with people who dealt with them really very early. As early, I think my first dealings with them were sometime 1965, 66, sometime about then. Long time. First-rate businessman, stayed in a tough industry, was competitive in a tough industry, survived. That's an amazing fact in and of itself. But he gave so much of his time, and he gave his money too, but he never talked about it. But his time, I think, was more valuable than his money, because he did have great insight. Yes. He was a very wise man, a good counselor, and not fancy, down-home type guy. Always talked about wisdom that he'd picked up over the years. He'd worked with these people. He'd come out of this background, so forth. He wasn't giving these grand philosophical theories. He just told you what made sense, and usually it made sense. I mean, it was profitable information that he provided. Now, he had this calling. The most important thing that he did was not the selling coins, because he could have been replaced in the selling of coins, maybe a little bit higher premium, but somebody else could have bought and sold coins. But I don't think he was replaceable in terms of the development of at least the Rothbardian side of the libertarian movement. I can't imagine that movement in retrospect if Burt hadn't been there. And yet he left almost not a trace. He was not out front. He was not a guy to go around talking about what he'd done or who he knew. He was always there as a presence with a lot of wisdom, got no credit for it, did it out of, I guess, the kindness of his heart, and out of his great commitment to the ideal of freedom. And there were other people like that before him. There was William Volcker, similar man, Mr. Anonymous. And in his era, 30s and 40s, he kept these ideas alive, always in the background. Nobody knew he was there, kept his mouth shut, didn't want publicity. Tremendous businessman, effective businessman for years and years, gave away his money wisely. There aren't many people like this. Occasionally someone comes along like you. You're good at fundraising, which is good because the Mises Institute needs the money. You're good at writing an occasional article or putting together a book. You're not out there in the sense that Rothbard was out there, but then nobody was out there like Rothbard was out there. Now, Rothbard, his calling was clear, and that is defend the concept of zero government in every area of life, historically, theoretically, ethically, economically, in every area. Murray Rothbard wanted to make the strongest, clearest case for what he would call the ethics of liberty. But in terms of Murray's effect as a teacher, not so good in the classroom. Got much better in his later years. But in the early years, he spent all his years with Brooklyn Polytechnic teaching a bunch of engineers who didn't want to major in economics, weren't interested in economics. Now, it put food on the table, and that was its function. That the job was separate from Murray's calling, but it supported him, so it was a fine thing. But you don't think of Murray Rothbard as the American teacher of the year at Brooklyn Polytechnic. So he was able to get his income, which is a good thing, but he is most famous for what he basically never got paid for, or got paid very little, which is to be the most articulate defender of the anarcho-capitalist system of the 20th century.
No, and really the creator of modern libertarianism, in the fact that he combined Austrian economics and natural law and...
And revisionist history.
Well, and revisionist history, Gary North, you're an historian. And he also combined that with anarchism, which in the past, if we think of Lysander Spooner and some of the others, was missing some economic components. So Murray brought it all together. As you say, he used his job to support his vocation. The job never paid him much either, but he worked, just
ceaselessly.
Oh yeah, unbelievable. The most productive person I was ever close to.
That would, except for my father-in-law, R.J. Rush Dooney, I would say, yeah, that's probably right. The fact is, those of us, and I'm one of them, who have to segregate our two sides of our brain, I guess, or at least two sides of our lives between calling and occupation, there's a certain price to be paid because you spend a lot of time with your occupation that you really would rather be spending on the calling. But most people are like that. So what I'm going to tell these students is find out early where you have some exceptional gift, where you really would be hard to replace, and concentrate on that very, very early, and concentrate on it constantly. And then if you can find an academic job, fine, do that. If you can't find an academic job, then make a living like Bert Blummert. Do something else with your life to put food on the table. But constantly add to whatever this gift is that you have so that you leave a legacy based on this extraordinary insight that you have and the time that you put in on it. And if a student will do that, with today's world of amazing technology for the transfer of ideas and information, and so cheap to get into that we've never seen anything like this in the history of man. And if a student can find that niche where he really can make a significant contribution, the fact that he can't earn a living doing that is neither here nor there. It's easier if he can, but most people can't. So I'm going to encourage them, even if they don't get into academia, if they don't wind up as professors in some university, they can still make a tremendous contribution if they stick to their knitting.
Well, I think of Bert, who touched so many thousands of lives over the years with his talking about money. He always would have some old notes, a gold coin note and a silver certificate and German inflation notes. And he would give, if the people were interested, especially young people, would give the most effective short history of money I've ever heard. And he also would end up, he had some concentration camp notes. That had been issued under the Nazis and used as money in the concentration camps. And he would talk about where things end up if you don't have a free society and don't have the economic and libertarian pillars of a free society.
I would encourage anybody listening to find out what area he can make a contribution in. I don't mean financial. I mean really time, effort, vision. And get onto the web and get a blog site up and maybe go to podcasting. This can all be done for almost no money at all. It can be picked up rather rapidly in terms of time, in terms of commitment. Even if you only have a portal in which you're directing people to libertarian sites or conservative sites or whatever it is you really believe in, the opportunities are so extraordinary today in the last 15 years that simply never has existed in human history. I think people, if they have this kind of gift, if they have an idea, an insight, a specialty, they owe it to themselves and they owe it to others to begin to transfer that material to a broader population. And if they do that, I think, and if enough people do it, this really will make a significant change in the lives of millions of people.
Well, Gary, you've been a pioneer in putting up all of your books up for free on the web. I think it's so sad that your late father-in-law, you mentioned him, R.J. Rushdoony, that his works aren't up on the web. I think of, you might be more interested in his religious works. I'm thinking of, his wonderful writings on education, on population. I mean, so many different subjects.
So many topics. History.
Well, any chance of that they'll ever be available? Because otherwise they're dead, disappeared.
We Calvinists never speak of chance, but of course, in the providence of God, I hope at some point that will be the case. And again, Lou, you really have the model here. The Mises Institute has the model, and that is in the section of the site on literature, you have all of this material that can be downloaded and printed out. And I do it. I'm cheap. I do it. And then at some point, though, if I read something and I think, I don't want to just put this in a three-hole binder. I want to have the book in my hand. I want to use this thing. So you spend some money and you buy the book because you like the book and it fits well on the shelf and so forth. You've found that giving it away has not in any way hurt your book sales business because you have a tremendous book sale business.
No, it's only enhanced it. It's actually enhanced it. And Amazon, of course, knows this too. They don't give away the whole thing, but they give away chapters of books. And yeah, just like people who are in a bookstore want to physically hold the book, look at it. You're not forced to buy it without opening it. So what we do is expand that concept. And of course, we also have we're a nonprofit. We have a different goal in mind. We want to spread the word of Austrian economics, of libertarianism, of revisionist history, all the great literature, so much of which had been forgotten. It's all back now, as Jeff Tucker points out, resurrected from the dead.
That's right. And it is if there was not a hole in the memory hole, it was a very, very large container. And now, fishing around in that container, we're beginning, a good phrase, to resurrect this information. And it's making it very, very difficult for what I would call establishment anything to make the standard historical case of how the establishment whatever came into existence, because now a student can go online with Google or other search engines and in just a matter of a couple of hours or less find out that the establishment story is essentially a pack of lies. And this makes it very difficult for any establishment to maintain its legitimacy, and that's a good thing, unless it's telling the truth. Now, if it's telling the truth, more power to it, and I hope it maintains its legitimacy.
Let me know that when you find it.
Yeah, I'll do an article for LouRockwell.com when I find that. I hope you publish it, too. But don't hold your breath on that one.
Gary North, thanks so much for coming on today. Take a look at Gary's site, GaryNorth.com. Take a look at his magnificent archive on LouRockwell.com. 45 books and counting. Gary, how many before you're done? A lot more.
I hope so.
Thank you, Gary.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. Thanks for listening.